Hello, it's Barbara. Today I'm back at the shop of Harry Ingham. We did speak to him at length quite some months ago, and at the end of the recording he did started to mention buses, and we've never managed to rendezvous, have we, Harry, since then. So today we're going to be talking about buses. So hello, Harry, and thank you for inviting me. We spoke about cars before, and just to remind people, you're like me, you're an incomer, and you came in the same year as me, 1964, into Tomberden. So we've lots to talk about, but we're going to concentrate on the buses this time.
Right, okay. Well, I'd always been very interested in buses from a long way back, since I was about 10. I'm interested in transport generally, but I was always interested in buses. However, when I came to Tomberden, the shop in Tomberden came up for sale, the Sartle shop, and my wife and myself, we acquired it and we ran it together for a long while. In fact, it's still running. At this time, I was interested in the bus service in Tomberden because they had a very interesting fleet. They had about 30 double-deckers, and they were all pretty well time expired. They were all dating from 1948 to 1950. And they were going to be replaced shortly. So what we thought we'd do, I was actually in the Antiquarian Society at the time, and I met two guys in the Antiquarian Society, Dennis O'Neill and Norman Brown. Norman Brown had an electrical shop in the centre of the town. Norman Brown, Dennis O'Neill and myself decided to try and preserve this Tomberden bus. We had to decide which one to save, so we settled upon bus number 2, which was quite a respectable looking bus, and it was due for withdrawal in 1970. So we knew we didn't have much time before it was tendered for and sent to the scrapyard. And what happened in those days, when buses were time expired, they all had a certificate of fitness, buses did, and when that certificate of fitness expired, the bus operator had to decide whether it was worth overhauling the bus or getting rid of it, because these certificates of fitness, initially when they were new, they used to last for 7 years, but as the bus got older they were only renewed for 2 years or so. So we knew that possibly number 2 might not get its certificate renewed because of its age. Well, it was more than 20 years old then. So we managed to get in contact with Mr. Metcalf, who was the general manager of the bus company. And with being in the Antiquarian Society, we also used the Antiquarian Society's efforts to help this along. Initially, the Antiquarian Society were not very keen on doing this, because they thought it was going to be a terrible expense. In fact, one of the societies said it would be a bottomless pit, but we didn't think so. We were so keen on preserving it. However, we managed to put a tender in for it. We still had to put a tender in, but it was higher than the scrapman's tender. They always went out on a tender sheet, these buses. People just had to make an offer for them. And usually, on a bus that was 20 years old, it was a scrap dealer that made the offer, and they went for around about £100 then. Anyway, we managed to, with the auspices of the Antiquarian Society, to get this bus, and we were presented with it, but we had to have some sort of legal ownership of it, and the legal ownership came into the Antiquarian Society. We didn't, Norman, Dennis and myself didn't own it, but the Antiquarian Society actually owned this bus when it passed from the bus company. However, there had to be some form of money changed hands, and actually it changed hands for £1, just a token payment. It then became the property of the Antiquarian Society, but Dennis and Norman and myself, we used to have to look after it. We were responsible for it. The first thing we wanted to do was to try and find somewhere to put it, which was quite difficult, really, in those days. But there happened to be a building at the bottom of Bacup Road, is now owned by Fielding Factors, and it would accommodate probably four buses. Don Ulrig was selling this building at the time, and he kindly gave us permission to put the bus in there until such time that the building was sold. So we did this, and things went along quite well, and we got the bus running and on the road and taxed and insured and everything. And we used to run it to bus rallies in the summertime. I've driven it to quite a few bus rallies. One of the best things that I did, one of the most important things, was a trip I did from Tomenden bus station up to Summit, which I think was the first bus route that came in. When Tomenden first got its buses, it was 1908. And Tomenden was one of the first municipalities to get buses. I think there was one other, I think it was a seaside town in the south of England. However, Tomenden used buses because there was little or no transport in this town. Other towns, like Halifax and Rochdale, had electric trams. However, the terrain around here and the sheer length of laying a track, it would have to be laid from Summit Littleborough to Hebden Bridge. And I rather fancy that the sheer cost of the thing, coupled with the difficult terrain, is why they didn't use trams. The only form of transport in Tomenden at the time was provided by the Tomenden Carriage Company, and they operated a horse bus. That I think they may have had two horse buses, but there's very little known about the Tomenden Carriage Company, and I think one photograph exists of an actual horse-drawn bus. Strangely enough, Tomenden Carriage Company had a depot, and it was situated by the Golden Lion. In between the Golden Lion and the canal, there is a strip of land, and the Tomenden Carriage Company had a building there. Strangely enough, this building survived until probably the late 80s, before it was demolished. And if you went inside it, which I did many times, there was a ramp up at the back of the building where the horses used to be led up. The horses lived on the first floor, and the horses were led up this ramp, and that's where their stables were, up at the top. And they kept the actual vehicles on the ground floor. This building eventually came into disuse because of the advent of the motor buses, and it became a scrapyard. And it was operated by a man by the name of Ellis Schofield, who at one time was the mayor of Tomenden. And Ellis Schofield had a very good assistant, a lady assistant, called Alma. And you wouldn't find many ladies in scrapyards, but Alma was, she was a real go-getter. She could do anything, and she was very, very helpful. Anyway, eventually, I'm not quite sure what the end was of the scrapyard, but I think it was Ellis Schofield. I think he retired eventually. And it finally closed probably in the early 90s. It did linger on a long while, that building.
Yeah, I remember Alma.
Do you remember Alma?
I do.
I'm very pleased about that. Yeah. I thought I was the only one.
No.
Because I don't know why I had dealings with Alma, but she used to come over. I had a shop which was pretty well opposite the Golden Lion. And if Alma found anything interested in the scrapyard, she'd bring it over for me.
Yeah.
And I remember bringing one of these little buses over, and it said, if you found it in all among all the scrap, and she brought it over to me, which was very kind of her. Unfortunately, one of the men that were helping me with number two, Norman Brown, he died in 1972, which was rather tragic. So it was left to me to look after the bus on my own, virtually. Well, I was on my own, because Dennis O'Neill lived way out of the town. He lived at Lumbucks, and he wasn't able to spend much time, and he wasn't a mechanic-type person anyway, although he was a very nice chap indeed. Unfortunately, he's died since, but that's by the by. So I managed to find, eventually, the building at the bottom of Bacup Road was sold and we had to get out. So it was mighty desperate to find somewhere to put it. However, another member of the Antiquarian Society who lived at the home, which is a large house outside Tubman in Cliviger, he offered kindly to let us park it by the home temporarily until we could find somewhere to put it. After that, I started to look around, and it is very difficult to find somewhere to put a bus. So I decided that what I would do is build some sort of carport to put it under to save it from the worst of the weather. And at the time, going back to the 70s, I had several garages on Salford, and I managed to make a carport behind one of my garages big enough to take a bus. It was quite difficult to manoeuvre it into it, but I managed to do it. And there it stayed until Salford itself was redeveloped around about 1977, I think. So from 1970 to 77, I looked after number two, and I did all sorts of jobs on it, like changing the springs and removing carbon from the engine and all sorts of things. But I kept it running all the time. It then moved to Halifax. Another man that I know happened to find some room for it for the time being. However, after that, I pretty well lost touch with number two, and it passed through various hands, and it eventually ended up at present in the care of a man by the name Michael Sutcliffe, he's called. And Michael Sutcliffe did a great deal of restoration on number two, and it is in quite splendid condition. It visits Tobinon occasionally, but it lives in the south of England, where Michael Sutcliffe has his place. Michael Sutcliffe, incidentally, rebuilt a bus which is the oldest Tobinon bus to survive. And he found, I think that dates from about 1920, this old bus. And he found the bodywork. It was in a forest or somewhere, but he found it. And the body had been taken off the chassis. Anyway, at that time, buses and lorries were very, very similar, and the chassis were very, very similar. And Michael Sutcliffe managed to find a lorry chassis that was virtually identical to the one that had been on the bus. So he very carefully rebuilt the bus on this chassis.
We're going to have to take a pause there, Harry.
Right.
Just before we pause, is Michael Sutcliffe a Tobinon person?
He's got connections with Tobinon, yes.
Yeah.
I believe he used to live here once.
Right.
And I think relations of his live here.
Yeah. We'll pick up on from that point in the second part.
Thank you very much for your time, Harry.